Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.
There, Elizabeth.
Hey Sheila, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How's it going on your end?
Good. I'm trying not to get down about the weather and doing my best with that. It's been extraordinarily cold in Montana this week.
Yeah, meaning like 0 below.
Meaning like a low of negative 17.
Okay, maybe we should just move away from that subject then, because you're getting me cold here.
Yeah, but I will say I feel nervous that I shared this because then it gives people the impression that it's cold like this all the time in Montana, and it's really not the case. We've actually had a really mild winter, but we've had a stretch of really cold weather. But I digress. Ready to move on from the cold weather and glad that we're doing this today.
Yeah, I am too. So let's kind of jump in. I'll start because something that I read actually was the impetus for my thought that this could make a good podcast. It was a book that was recommended to me by my high school friend Joni, who I actually mentioned in my last blog post about how nice it was to reconnect with her. So another shout out to Joni. The book is called The Measure. And I'm going to give note to the author. It's Nikki Erlich, and it came out in 2022. So I'll try to be succinct, and I don't want to do any spoilers because I do recommend you read this book. But setting what happens in it, it's fairly early in the book. This is all set. So everyone in the world wakes up at the same time in their time zone. Australia wakes up and sees this sooner than other countries, kind of goes along the timeline. And there's a box with their name on it, wherever they are. Inside the box, it's discovered pretty quickly in the first few chapters, this all unfolds. There's a string, and the string is the determiner, the measure of your longevity, not the quality of your life, but the quantity, longevity of it. So, of course, what unfolds then? People, do I open this box once they hear that's what's in it from the people that opened it? What do I do with this information? I wasn't recommending to Elizabeth that we talk about what happens in the book, which is fascinating, the impact on so many things. I kind of wanted to make it more personal and have a conversation about if we were confronted with this, what we would do.
Well, I love that you brought this to my attention because it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, so I can go first because I've probably thought about it a lot. I read the book a couple of months ago, maybe. And for me, of course, as with most of the people in the book who didn't immediately open the box, the debate is, do I want to know? And I went around with that for a while because right now we don't. And there's kind of a pleasure in that in some ways. And then there's downsides. I finally decided, given my age and all the other factors in my life, I would want to open the box. I would want to see how long the rest of my life was going to be. And I don't want to have one big long soliloquy about my stuff. So I'm going to throw it over to you for that part and say, what do you think you would do? Would you even open the box?
I would also open the box, and I would say the main reason why is that I am not actually a procrastinator. I think some people would be maybe more nervous to open the box because if they knew that they had a short life ahead of them, then they might want to pack everything in. But if they knew they had a long life ahead of them, they may procrastinate doing some of the things that you do because you know that life could be short. And I'm not a procrastinator, so I kind of live my life feeling like I'm doing exactly what I want to do, regardless of whether it's a long or short life. And if it was a shorter life, I would want to get a few things done even more quickly than that, I would say.
Yeah, no, all valid points. I agree with everything you said in terms of the fact I would like to know also, thinking more in terms of the shortness of it, although the length of it, if it's long, has an impact. So I'll just share some of my thoughts. If it was short, I would look at it. And again, being 68 years old, I'm kind of comfortable financially, not wealthy by any means. It would impact on how I would move ahead with my quote retirement money, with money that I have. I think some of the people in the book, although they didn't really have that many characters in my generation, but I would imagine that would be an issue for the people of my generation to consider, because a lot of people make decisions wanting to protect their assets into a very long age. And if you knew that wasn't going to happen, it would be a bit of a game changer. I agree with you. I wouldn't say I'm a procrastinator either, but I don't know that I'm as much, especially at this point in my life, of taking the bull by the horns every day I get up and just doing what I need to do because life is short type thing. And I think there might be a little bit more of that going on. On the other hand, if it was long, it would be weird, you know, because you think if it's long, everybody go, yay, we're the lucky ones. And it's kind of viewed that way in the book a little bit. But again, the caveat I gave at the beginning, that doesn't mean your life is great. It just means you're still alive. Whether it be enjoying life, carefree, in great health, or not so much, you exist. And knowing that, this is going to sound really weird, I would probably adjust things toward that end too, because I've been very vocal with my family. I think Elizabeth and I have talked about it. I look ahead and I'm a much more quality versus quantity person. And if I had a long string, it would be like, oh God, I don't know if I want to live to my 90s. And it could be that I'm going to live to my 90s because I'm going to be like in memory care or on a ventilator or something like that. And that's something to think about. And something to think about would be, so what is it that I can do that's still in my control now to be sure that longevity is the quality I would prefer? Because you can't mess around with it. That's one of the things in the book. Like, if it says you're going to be alive for a long time, you're going to be alive for a long time. I mean, some characters try to commit suicide, minor characters, and they can't. So it's fascinating. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the reason why I was interested in having this topic on And Perfectly Honest is because you brought up this book at a time when I was thinking about my parents' mortality. They're probably going to listen to this and think that sounds like an odd statement, but my mom got hurt skiing. She's fine now, but she has just decided that she is tired of getting hurt skiing, and she wants to make some changes before she's too old to enjoy those changes, specifically spend some time in Florida rather than spend so much time skiing. So it got me thinking about my parents' mortality and my own mortality and all the challenges that might come up in that. And it got us talking about the topic of how do you discuss mortality with friends and family and with yourself too. And one of the things that I appreciate about you, Sheila, is that you actually are pretty comfortable talking about mortality from my experience with you. And you also are much more of a quality versus quantity person around life. And so I guess I want to throw it back to you. Have you learned anything from your experience in getting more comfortable talking about mortality?
I guess the first thing, because just as a, you know, a little more information, I've spent, oh gosh, it's now 15 years, because I got interested in like 2010, I think, in exploring that, the whole issue of advanced directives and end of life and what's a quality life and, you know, a lot of healthcare issues going too far. And when can you, I was going to say pull the plug. I don't really mean that literally, although maybe I do, you know, those kind of decision-making and recognizing that, yeah, people shy away from it. It's scary. And maybe that created something in me to want to lean more into it. I even for a while wanted to create a nonprofit around more information sharing and trying to encourage people. But I have to say, it didn't have much success. So anyway, what I learned as I've been a little more vocal, it was a hard go to try to get anything off the ground and attracting people to want to learn more about this. And even, and I don't speak personally, and I'm not going to get into any of their own opinions or anything, but even my family, like it's a tough topic. People don't want to consider it because it makes them sad. And they almost feel, I don't know, that old expression, like they're whistling past the graveyard or something. You know, if you don't talk about it, maybe it'll go away. And so I guess to your question, maybe that's why this book had more fascination to me, because it forced everybody. It was right in their face if they opened that box. And even if they didn't, if they kept the box, some people threw it away. You know, it was something that was not going away. And I think there is a lot to be gained by thinking about it, talking about it, preparing for it, because it is inevitable. As you know, birth is a terminal illness is a really kind of true expression. Doesn't sound great.
Yeah, great point, Sheila. I learned something interesting from my journey in this. So my ex-husband and I were preparing our living wills, and we had to have a conversation about what we wanted each other to do in the event that we became incapacitated. And I outlined some of my wishes, which more or less is that if the quality of my life is going to be severely diminished, I would rather end my life than continue. And I mean, severely diminished, like if I can't feed myself, if I can't get out of bed, things like that. And in my honest conversation with my ex-husband, I don't think he'd mind me sharing this, he shared that he would be unable to make that decision to pull the plug on me. And so as a result, I felt really uncomfortable with him being the person to make that decision, because I felt that he would allow me to live in a state that I didn't want to live. And so I have my mom in that position, because I know that she will pull the plug, because we feel very similarly about quality versus quantity of life. And that was not an easy conversation. And I guess what I learned from that conversation is that you do need to talk about this stuff, because I could have ended up in the situation where I was in extreme pain but unable to communicate, and my ex-husband wasn't pulling the plug on me. So I'm glad that we got to this. And, you know, it took some prying for him to admit and open up that he was going to be unable to make that decision. The second thing that I learned in that process is that, you know, we were able to come to a compromise there in our relationship that worked for both of us. But feelings about this stuff are important in relationships. And it's not just with ending life, but it's also in healthcare too. If one partner is resistant to accessing healthcare, for instance, it can affect the other partner. And now that I have this blank slate in relationships, I'm using that as one of my screening items. So whether someone is a good fit is to, you know, what are our values about how we access healthcare, how we take care of our health, all those things, because it definitely impacts the other person in a relationship.
I agree. That's a really good screening question because of that impact. And just to try to, so we don't go too far afield, to bring it back, this whole idea of knowing your longevity and then the decisions that you make, how they can impact on the people who love you, if you even share it with them. Because there were struggles in the book where people were hesitant to tell their parents because of the emotional pain it would cause them from that moment on. Hmm. Because you don't imagine that you're going to survive your child. And so that's kind of one of the, I don't want to call it a conundrum, that you're presented with too. Who do you share that information with? If you're in a relationship, and, you know, this issue came up. It's like people in a relationship, and then they found out they were a short stringer, is what they called it. Do I share that? Is it fair not to? Here we are. We're like married, and we're planning on having a child. And now I've gotten this information that I'm not going to be around for a lot of that child's life, because the book was very, I mean, they could determine the number of years you had left after much experimentation and comparing strings, et cetera, because that's why some people didn't want to open the box, because I don't want to know. If I don't know, then I don't have to tell anybody.
That is really interesting. I didn't think about that side of it. Mm-hmm. Also, a really difficult kind of conversation to have. Mm-hmm. In my relationship journey, one of the things that I've learned is that when I reveal too much too early, it can actually prevent me from having an opportunity to foster a deeper relationship with the person. And there's a thin line between being dishonest and just knowing that there's a time and place to reveal things. It's just one example. The relationship that I'm in now, he revealed some things to me early on in our relationship that I initially thought, oh, this is a deal breaker. This is not going to work. And I almost wanted to end the relationship right then, but something told me not to do that. And now I feel totally differently about those things, that they aren't deal breakers, and that I have actually learned a lot from those things. And so there is something that is challenging about changing fate. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is all to say that there's nothing perfect, hence the title of this podcast, but there's nothing perfect about when to share things or when to be told things. And maybe there's a reason that we can't see these things in front of us. And as much as I said that I would open that box, and I do stand by that, I do wonder what I would miss out on by actually knowing something that I wasn't supposed to know.
Right. And then feeling that you may have to reveal it. I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking about the separate topic of how much do you reveal when you're first getting to know somebody? Because there are things that after one date, whatever, would really put somebody off, as you expressed. And so then you'd be gone. It's almost like putting too much information on your dating profile. And there you go, swipe left. They never got a chance because you put something on there that you really didn't need to. And then you never got the chance to meet that person. So right. I would vote anything that you would feel, I hate to say could be out of the norm, but might be a challenge for people. Might have the component of a little bit of baggage going on. It's not unfair to not put it all out there. Because it does separate, oh gosh, I don't even know what, and the wheat from the chaff, I don't know. If you do a date a few more times and then you reveal it, it kind of gives you a sense of if this person is good for you because either they take off or they stay. And maybe everybody would have taken off immediately without getting to know you a little. It's asking a lot of somebody if you reveal it on a first date. I don't even know what I'm thinking in my head as you reveal, but something challenging. It does tie back into this for people who would still be looking to form relationships or in relationships with somebody, this string idea. How is it going to land on the other person? Some people would be saying, hey, especially if they're married, you know, I committed till death do us part. And some people may say, I'm not up for that. I'm not up for that. Because now I know.
Well, I may be changing my mind as we're talking through this, but
I love it. I love it. I really do think if I was your age, I wouldn't open the box. Because I have most of my reasons for opening the box do center around the fact that I'm not really relishing longevity into my 90s. And I'm at a point where a lot of the decision making should center around getting the most out of life. Mm. And if I knew I needed to do that, you know, you started this by saying I'd want to know because then I would do, but it does impact on so many other aspects then. I mean, not to get in, I said this book is fascinating. I mean, it became a discrimination thing. Where they were questioning people, are you a short stringer? And then it became an issue. Well, do we hire somebody who's a short stringer? So again, I didn't want to go into the weeds or spoil anything in the book, but when you start to really pare down on it, it's like, wow, the ripple effect of having that information would be enormous, not just on you.
Yeah, that's a great thought. And I think I also want to admit that the fact that I don't have a lot of financial scarcity, that I have a high confidence in my financial future, makes it much easier for me to think about things like this. When you're living hand to mouth and working your tail off to just put food on the table, and then you find out that you might die in 2 weeks. I mean, that's something that would make a bigger impact on somebody's life than probably mine. And so I guess I just want to out that it's a huge luxury for me to be able to say that I don't procrastinate because I'm not working that hard just to make ends meet.
Well, I don't need to thank you, but that's a nice insight because it is true. It can be a very different issue for somebody who is struggling day by day and doesn't have the luxury of saying, so now, what should I do? How can I proceed? There's so many other factors involved.
Right. With the exception of the relationship issue of, you know, would a person want to engage in a relationship with you or whatnot, which I think is a really important distinction, regardless of your financial situation. With the exception of that, honestly, I'm really fortunate in that knowing when I was going to pass would just make it so that I would have a little less anxiety and also a little more motivation to do things that I can afford to do. That's just a huge difference. So the main thing that this would change for me is that I would just have less anxiety because I would know what schedule I could do the things that I want to do, regardless of the length of my life. And I would have less anxiety about preventing things that may or may not happen to me. Like, just as one small example, I'm in a relationship with someone who's sick right now, and I'm not sick. I've managed to get through with just some minor symptoms. But if I knew that I wasn't going to get sick, then it would make my life a lot easier right now.
Yeah, but I have to interject again. The point of this is it doesn't mean you might not get sick, and it doesn't mean that you might not get sick and then be debilitated for the rest of that very long life because of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, some people might make the decision, I'm going to do all these not foolhardy but risk-taking things, and they jump out of a plane. It doesn't go well, but they don't die. But they're a paraplegic or a quadriplegic for the rest of their life. So again, I don't want to be doom and gloom. It just, the long stringers, when they open the box, they think, oh, I'm made in the shade, but I don't know, maybe not so much. And that was my perspective, thinking I'll open the box and it'll mean, oh, you know, I'll be one of these people that live to be 100, and I'm just going to be, you know, Betty White, who everybody adores and is, you know, seems to be on the ball up until the time that she passed, but maybe not so much. So that's why I think it's a fascinating question. And I think it's just for listeners, even if you don't read the book, which I recommend you do, it's a nice, not a nice, it's an interesting conversation to have with people. And I think if you have it with loved ones, especially, it might be the icebreaker to those conversations you were talking about earlier, I was talking about earlier, but it's not one of these, okay, what kind of life-saving procedures do you want and what don't you want? Do you want a ventilator? Do you want a feeding tube? Which people tend to shy away from. You know, you bring out the living will and it's like, here, read this, sign it. It's like, no. I think that may be why it resonated or I embraced it so much, because of that interest I have had for so many years.
Well, it sounds like a really interesting book and definitely a lot of opportunities for honest conversations, either in theory or in real life. And Sheila, I'm really grateful that you brought it to my attention.
I appreciate your being open to having this discussion about something that was so engaging for me. So win-win on both of our parts.
Great. Well, I'll talk about anything. So thanks again, and until next time.
Yep. Bye, Elizabeth.
Bye.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical-related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.